Hello everyone, welcome to the Villa Together podcast, Terrace Talk special episode with myself, Chris Ellis. Once again, I'm joined by Ian Gillett. Ian, how you doing?
I'm all good, thanks, Chris. How you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you, good as always. And once again, as usual, I'm joined by Joe Davidson. Joe, how you doing?
Very well, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Nice one, thank you very much. And for those watching on YouTube, we have got a special guest. And the reason for our special guest is because it appears that, as reported via Twitter, via various outlets, also I think he's been on Sky Sports News and on BBC News, Morgan Sanson from Olympique Marseille appears to be on his way to Aston Villa. So our special guest, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Hi everyone, my name's Ben. So born in the UK, but lived in France. So half British, half French, support Marseille. So I head up the international fan group here in the UK, and I contribute to the Marseille View podcast with a few colleagues as well. So good to be on another podcast. Wish it was in the happier circumstances, because not very happy to be losing one of our best players, but it is what it is.
Nice one. Massive thanks for coming on. As we said just before recording, for obviously a lot of people, we're active on Twitter, all the Villa fans on Twitter. Obviously, you've mentioned Morgan Sanson, what's he like as a player? People will mention stats, people also say watch him on YouTube, etc. So I'm going to put it to you, Ben. Morgan Sanson, just give us as much detail as possible, the type of player he is, his strengths, his weaknesses, and all that kind of stuff, just to kind of give all the Villa fans listening best ideas what kind of player he is.
He was an exciting youth prospect. So when Marseille signed him at the time, we just had new owners. We spent, I think it was 10 million quid on him. And at the time, we bought him in a January transfer window as well. He was the top assist man in Ligue 1 with Montpellier. I think he already had like something like 12 assists at that time. I think he managed to get three or four more as he bedded into the Marseille team. And it's... interestingly, when we signed him, he wasn't a wide player, but he was a wide midfield player, as you know, they used to have in the old 4-4-2 systems. So he was a right midfielder, not a winger, but a genuine sort of right midfielder. And as he's played for Marseille, he's evolved into a central midfielder. And he's, I think the first couple of years, he was a bit fragile. He used to get injured quite a bit, but he still played a decent amount of games. I think in 2016, 2017, when we went to the... No, so 2017, 2018, went to Europa League final. He played something like 53 games that season. And he gradually bulked up physically and turned into a really good box-to-box midfielder for the French League. So it's hard to say. We like Sanson a lot because he's one of those maximum efforts. You know, on Saturday, we lost at home to Nîmes, who are bottom in the league, and we've been quite dismal. And interestingly, that's coincided with Sanson was out for four games before that game. So he's been injured and the team's dropped off form a bit, and there's a bit less energy in midfield. And again, on Saturday, it was lackluster, but he was probably the main man before he went off to throw himself about the pitch, and he ran the most. So his strengths really are his level of effort. His shooting ability is quite good. He can pick a pass, and he's got pace, to be fair. But some of the most frustrating aspects of his game are that he drifts out too often. So you'll be in the game and he'll start brightly and get lots of touches on the ball. And then, and this is I think more a staple of Marseille as tactically and as a team and the squad that we've had, that it's been together for a few years now, is he sort of ends up in this role where he covers a lot of ground, but not very effectively. And partly down to the way Marseille play and the players he has around him. But he gets stuck in this running game where he runs, but not in the most effective way. And he doesn't, the team doesn't press as a unit. So he ends up covering a lot of ground and tiring himself out. And then he has moments of absence after that, towards the end of the first half and then the second half, which has been one of the main frustrations. So, good player, still got potential to improve, but it was quite clear to a lot of us at Marseille that he was never going to sort of reach that next level in the French League and playing for Marseille.
Do you think he's a player that maybe is that a frustration? Because he has been linked previously to going elsewhere. I think last year he was linked to Wolves, he was linked to Arsenal.
West Ham as well, yeah.
Yeah, he's been linked to other Premier League clubs. Is that something that may have affected his performances because he's been linked to Premier League moves? It hasn't come about, so then it's something that subconsciously has affected him, possibly?
It could be. I think it's... the way we saw him evolve, we signed him, he was the top assist man in the league, and he's never reached that sort of level of... you know, of assists. He can pick a pass, but he's not someone who contributes a lot of stats. But he's just changed. His role's changed, and he's been moulded by Rudy Garcia and subsequently AVB, who's now the manager. He's been moulded into this workhorse of a midfielder. I think it's partly down to the role he's being asked to play in the team, but I think it's also down to the way he's developed as a player. He seems to have lost that creativity. And I don't know enough about Villa to know why you're signing him. I think I find that he's quite a similar player to John McGinn, but John McGinn's a better player in my view, but that's because he plays in the Premier League and Sanson has the potential maybe to reach that level, but he's not a creative player, or he certainly hasn't been for Marseille in recent years.
Yeah, I mean... what about, obviously, he's played in a number of different positions.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is his best position?
It's central midfielder. Definitely that's a number eight, which is the number he has anyway. But he is a sort of box-to-box. He can pick the ball up in midfield and run at defences. And he can also close down space and combine in sort of small angles and put together some nifty little one-touch passes and stuff. He's played, I think recently we've tried him as a sort of 9.5. So, you know, sort of second striker, but coming in deep from midfield and getting on the end of crosses and stuff. But he needs to improve his finishing if he's going to play that role consistently. If he's going to be more attacking, that's an aspect of his game that he really needs to improve, is his contributions in terms of goals and assists, because they've been quite low the last few years. I think he's very good as a workhorse type midfielder, breaking up play and picking, you know, sort of turning towards when there's a counter attack. He's very good at turning towards the, you know, his front three and trying to spray the ball out to one of them.
What about, as we mentioned, other clubs were linked with him last year. I think I read something about fees of around 30, 35, 40 million pounds.
If only.
Obviously, now it seems to be somewhere between the 15 to 20 million pound mark for him. Is this linked to the collapse of the French TV deal?
That's part of it, but Marseille has been in dire straits financially for a couple of years. Money was pissed away on signings like Kevin Strootman, who, you know, we spent 28 million on, and he's gone out on loan to Genoa in Italy. So there was a waste of investment from the new owner. They pissed away close to, you know, 150 million quid. And we've got players like Payet on huge salaries, who sadly Payet is a shadow of his former self this season. Yeah. He's overweight, his lack of effort. And we're carrying this dead weight. So we already had issues prior to COVID, and it was always going to be tough to sort of justify that we could sell players at a high price, because everybody knows beggars can't be choosers. But certainly, I'll be honest, if I was to put a price on Sanson outside of COVID, I'd say he's probably worth 25 million quid tops. It's a fair price. Villa are getting a fair price for him. I think we're happy with the price because, you know, he's only got a year and a half left on his deal. And quite frankly, we need a squad overhaul. And we've got a new sporting director who seems to be sort of edging towards clearing out some of the dead wood and players that have been around for a long time and replacing them with new players and changing the tactics up a bit. So it's a fair price for him. You know, the window is not what it was 2 years ago when they were talking about 30, 35 million for him. Yep. Even for a club like Marseille, so we've always struggled to sell our players for good money. I think Zambo Gisa's probably the only one that we've sold for good money in recent years. He went for 28 million quid to Fulham. Drogba, before that, was the record transfer to Chelsea for 32 million quid. If we were Lyon, you know, they would probably, and you've seen the prices of like Aouar and Lacazette and players like that in recent years, and then Ndombele, because they've got a conveyor belt of youth talent coming through every season, they manage to command fees around 45, 50 million because people know they're buying quality because it's consistent from Lyon. From if Sanson was a Lyon player, yeah, it costs 40, 45 million, and that's our problem, and it's quite frustrating for Marseille fans.
Yeah, it's one of them. I think what Dean Smith has said that we've heard in recent weeks with the January transfer window opening, he said that we weren't going to be busy and that we weren't in for anyone unless the right deal came. I think we have been linked with Sanson before. How concrete those links were, I'm not sure. And it may have been that because of the TV deal and possibly the other things you mentioned about Marseille, that this was something that popped up and it seemed like a good deal.
Yeah, we're making moves of our own. So we've signed a right back on loan from Fiorentina, but we're apparently on the verge of signing Arkadiusz Milik from Napoli. Yeah. I can imagine that, knowing our financial situation and Napoli are driving a hard bargain, we need funds to get that signing over the line. And there's talks of us going in for Metz midfielder Boulaya for sort of 5 to 7 million to replace Sanson. You know, he's a good, nifty little player. If we can pull this deal off and get those two signings over the line, I think all Marseille fans will view this positively. And, you know, thank you, Sanson, for the memories and all your hard work. But you never quite developed into what your potential led us to believe you could in our team and in this league. So, yeah, I think it's the main interest of this is trying to get those two other deals over the line for us. And we'll take, you know, 16, 17 million quid for him. I'm happy with that, considering he's got 18 months left on his deal and he's done his time with us.
Just before you go, just kind of, do you think that the deal, so taking everything into account that you've just mentioned about obviously him going, two new signings coming in for you guys, do you think the deal is more of a win for Aston Villa or more of a win for Marseille?
It's a win-win for both, to be honest. You know, we're getting a decent amount of money for a player who's, as I've said, put in his time and maximum effort for us. So thank you to him for the services and best of luck to him. For Villa, you know, this is someone who could have ended up at Tottenham or Wolves. And you know, without disrespect to Villa, they're teams that are above you. And if they'd have signed him and he'd kicked on and played well for them, everybody would be thinking, wow, you know, hell of a bargain at that price. So Villa are getting a bit of a bargain, considering that maybe in a non-COVID market, it'd be worth a bit more money. I just think that he, like every player coming from the French League, there seems to be this rule that they need sort of 6 to 9 months to adapt to the Premier League. Yeah. I think Sanson will be one of those that will adapt quicker because he's got that physicality and that stamina to you know, to sort of make an impact in the sort of short and medium term. But I don't think that impact, if you guys are expecting goals and assists, maybe not. But if you're expecting someone who's going to run themselves into the ground and slot into your counter-attacking play quite well, I think that's what he'll do for you guys, and he'll be a good signing. But again, for, you know, for 16, 17 million quid in today's money in the Premier League, it's worth the gamble, to be honest.
Yeah, no, totally. I think these days, even kind of aside from the kind of COVID situation, all that kind of stuff, signing a player who's played at that level for, you know, 15, 16 million pounds, maybe a bit more, is a good deal. And it, as you say, it's worth taking a risk. And it seems like when you look at our summer transfer window, our signings, made 5 signings, they've all performed very well. So far, in a
Villa know what they're doing. Yeah, you'd hope.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, it's he's played the Champions League this season. I think he played it with Montpellier as well before. He's got European experience. This is a player that's got almost, you know, over 170 professional matches under his belt. He's someone who works hard. He's not a troublemaker, and I think he'll be a good signing for Villa.
Yep, lovely. Just before you go, how can people find you on social media?
So we're at the Marseille View in terms of the Marseille podcast, and for the sort of Marseille London group, it's OM Nation London.
Lovely. You may have some people who may follow you to find out a bit more about
Sanson. By all means. Yeah, by all means. And yeah, best of luck to Villa and best of luck to Sanson, and take care of him for us. He's been a good player for us.
Yeah, hopefully he'll be a good player for us as well. But a massive, massive thanks for coming on. Much appreciated.
Happy to help.
Just one small before you go, Ben. Do that pronunciation again of the name so we can all get it right. Us promise.
Morgan Sanson.
There we go. Naturally rolls off the
tongue.
Yeah.
I'm lucky I've lived in France, so I speak French. But it's one of, you've got to say, it's not one of the most difficult names to pronounce. So, yeah, you'll be fine. You'll get the hang of it.
Lovely. I'm sure we will. Regardless, we will hear some odd pronunciations of that name over the next few
the commentators, yeah. I can imagine the commentators are going to have a field day with that.
Yeah. Lovely.
Nice. Best of luck, guys.
Cheers, Ben. Thanks very much. We'll speak to you
soon.
Thank you. Cheers. Cheers, mate. Lovely stuff. There you go. Ben from the Marseille View. All his details are in the description. Joe, a player that I think we have been linked with previously. As I mentioned, whether it was a tentative link or whether it was a solid link. What are your thoughts on this signing? Just off the cuff, straight off, what are your kind of initial reactions?
So for me, I think this is a good signing all around. £15 million, roughly, give or take, for a player with quite a lot of experience, with a skill set that fits very nicely into our midfield. He can cover either Barkley or he can cover McGinn, and it's going to mean that if either of them need to come out, we don't have to move Grealish anymore. It gives us another option off bench if one of those three isn't playing. I think all in all, it just makes sense. It's interesting listening to Ben and highlighting some of the key things around him. Like, yes, I think the importance of systems and how a player's individual skill set fits into that can't be underestimated. I must confess, I haven't seen a huge amount of Sanson. I've watched him in Champions League a little bit. I've watched all the highlight videos, as I'm sure we all have. And he strikes me as a player who was in the wrong team a lot of the time.
Yeah.
That his efforts were wasted, as Ben quite sort of succinctly put it as well. And I think his link-up play, his ability on the ball, that pace, could be a really nice facilitator for Ollie Watkins and Grealish and potentially Barkley as well. I think he's got all the makings of a player who could fit very nicely into what we're doing. And in fairness, I think a lot of people were saying the same thing about Barkley before we signed him on loan, to be fair. That, is he actually that good? Is he going to be a big loss for Chelsea? Fast forward 2-3 months and half the Chelsea fans are going, well, why did we get rid of him?
Yep. Yeah, I think it almost highlights about, the right player in the right team and about systems. And as I mentioned before, and we've mentioned many times, our recruitment seems to be bang on, and obviously very recently it's bang on, because you look at the five players we signed in the summer window, they're all pretty much, first team players at the moment. Bertrand Traoré, probably at times he's on, would pick in the first 11, but even aside from that, he's certainly shown his quality. So have all the others. Just to touch on, so Morgan Sanson. He's 26 years old. He'll be 27 this year. Obviously, he's French midfielder. As Ben mentioned, he's played out wide. He's played number 10 as a kind of a number 10 a la Grealish, and a number 10 as a kind of shadow support striker. He's played centre mid, so an 8. He's also played as a 6 holding. So I think that's probably key in the areas he can cover. For Marseille, 156 games played, 25 goals scored, 22 assists. Before that at Montpellier, put my teeth in, 106 games, 13 goals, 13 assists. Same reasonably well. I mean, Ben mentioned his assists haven't been as high recently. So far this season, 11 games, 2 goals, 3 assists. Last season, 27 games, 5 goals, 5 assists. Season before, 33 games, 5 goals, 3 assists. Season before, 33 games, 9 goals, 2 assists. So he does seem to have that output, which is certainly something that we're looking at. And this would appear to be possibly a kind of, in the short term, a replacement for Conor Hourihan, who today it's announced that Swansea have agreed a deal to sign him on loan. It may be that Dean Smith has said that he will come back in the summer. Whether he comes back and stays, it's just a case that he wants to play, or whether he comes back, we reassess the situation, which may be something to do with the Barkley deal. It seems like a lot of people are under the impression that it's time up for Conor Hourihan. He's going to go out on loan and possibly his deal may become permanent, whether with Swansea or elsewhere. Ian, what are your kind of thoughts on Hourihan going out?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think it's quite arguably debated through the Villa fan base, and a lot of people are torn on this one. For himself personally, he's going to want to play games, and for the first half of this season, he's very much been on the bench as a squad rotation player for Villa, hasn't really featured that much. So for him personally, I think it's great that he's going to go to Swansea, a team that like to play football traditionally. He should fit in really well there. He's a good championship player, isn't he? And I think he's one of those players, and I saw somebody earlier and they sort of perfectly summed it up. He's one of those players that is a really good championship player, and any team in the championship would be lucky to have him. But he's not quite at the level that you need for the Premier League in terms of where we are as a club right now. I mean, bottom four, bottom five, yeah, probably he's going to be starting for you. But when we are transitioning now and we're trying to improve season on season, he probably just falls a little bit short. And it's a hard one, isn't it? Because we've all got a lot of love for Conor. He's a big part of what we did to get back out of the championship. And he put some key sort of assists and goals in there to help us get back to the promised land. So it's a difficult one, but I can see the reasoning why. And I can see Smith would still want him as a squad player, because if we were to pick up a few injuries in that midfield position, then he could come in and do a job for a few games. We all know that. But I think it's just where we are as a club at the moment and where we want to be going. The sort of overall aim is to improve now, isn't it? We stayed up last season by the skin of our teeth. This season, we've had a solid start. We're looking really good. We've got a number of games in hand on most teams now, and we want to be looking to hit that top half of the league by the end of the season. So I think it's just a hard one, isn't it? He's a good lad. He's been an ever professional, hasn't he, at the club? Like you get with any player of the Irish ilk, they're diehards. They run for you and they put maximum effort in. So obviously, I just wish Conor all the best, and I hope it goes well for him at Swansea. I hope he can club in with a few goals and a few assists, get himself back on the map. And Dean Smith's already been quoted by the local media today as saying that he wants him back for next season as part of the squad. So who knows? It might not be the end for him, but I just think in terms of our improvement and where we want to be going, he just falls a little bit short for me in terms of the quality.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Justin, we've mentioned previously. I think a lot of people have probably got to the point where we appreciate what he's done, but it doesn't quite, not necessarily fit in, but when we're looking to move on to that next level, doesn't quite make the next level. There's been a lot of love for him on Twitter. Just going to mention a few of these. Jamie Gray, which I think is Andy Gray's son, at JM Gray 80, said Conor was a massive part of the resurgence of Villa. By all accounts, a top bloke and a top professional with his sweetest of left pegs. Sadly, the ambitions of the club have probably outgrown his abilities, but I think he leaves every fan's blessing and affection. I think Joe, that one pretty much sums up everyone's thoughts, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Hourihan himself sort of highlighted his ambition and his level, actually, with a comment he made about Grealish not that long ago, when he said Grealish is too good for Villa. And I think what that actually meant is that he's too good for the Villa that Hourihan is part of, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it's a sad one, because I think, as you say, everyone holds Hourihan in very high regard. He played a massive role in getting us back up. But unfortunately, he's just not going to play for us anymore. He's not going to get minutes. He's just going to rot on the bench during the reserves. And I think, a lot of respect to the guy for holding his hand up and saying, you know what, I'm probably not going to play. I'd rather go on loan and play for Swansea. I think a lot of players wouldn't do that. A lot of them would just sit on the bench saying, oh, I'm a Premier League player. whilst doing absolutely nothing. And as Ian pointed out as well, he has all the abilities that you need in the Championship, but he just lacks that extra something that you need if you're going to be a top half or even mid-table Premier League player, unfortunately. I think he goes with everyone's best wishes, and I hope it goes well for him.
Yeah, 100% agree with everything you've said. I think the kind of damning thing for him this season would be he started the first, I think it was the first two games of the season, played reasonably well. Barkley comes in, Barkley straight in the first team, kind of drops to the bench. Barkley gets injured, and it's Jacob Ramsey that comes in, not Cannavaro. And I think that just shows the way that we've progressed and the way we've moved on. And I think probably, you know, part of that, you know, Craig Shakespeare coming in the way we've just become that a bit more attacking, that bit more progressive, and that bit more dynamic. And, you know, Howran doesn't really fit into that. Simon Lines, at Simon Lines, I have to respect for Howran not being happy to sit on the bench. As you just mentioned, Joe, he wants to go and play football, deserves credit. Some signing by Bruce at the time, you know, fair play, Steve Bruce doesn't do a lot right, to be honest, but he has done this one, did his job, scored some key goals, got some assists. Thank you, Connor. 132 appearances, 23 goals, £3 million. Played a vital part in our promotion push in our survival season. Player that always put himself forward, even for the tough times. That was by at footy mad Luke 123. And everyone who wants to be nostalgic, if you go and look at George, which his Twitter handle is at Baron, that's B-A-R-R-O-N, AVFC1. He's done a bit of a compilation on Conor Hourihan on there, which is quite a nice one to watch. Briefly, look at Hourihan. You know, stats-wise, you're looking at the 29 goals, 23 assists for the club. Absolutely fantastic from midfield. Did reasonably well in the Premier League, and I think sometimes people, their judgment was clouded by the fact that he would pop up with the odd goal, the odd assist, but, you know, it doesn't kind of cover his... where he fell short in terms of elsewhere. We mentioned it before, we looked at it a couple of times when comparing him to the other guys, so Douglas Luiz and Marvis Nakamba. When you're looking at it from a defensive point of view, tackles per game, he was bottom of the three, interceptions per game, bottom of the three, and the numbers were pretty bad. And even in terms of passes, where you're looking at maybe if he played a bit further forward as an eight, his passes were way below everyone, including Marvellous Nakamba. So it was just a case the game was passing him by. But hopefully he'll do well at Swansea, and with Sanson coming in, we can move forward. Just going to move on to the last thing I'm going to move on is obviously the COVID situation that we've mentioned. Joe mentioned it. Joe, what do you think about, obviously we haven't played, the first team haven't played since New Year's Day. I've seen some people say, okay, we've had a number of weeks off, so is it a, not necessarily a blessing in disguise, but is it something where the guys could be fresh, but then at the same time, they haven't been able to train properly? I think I've seen Grealish on his treadmill at home, Douglas Luiz in a local park in Birmingham. How do you see this kind of break in the whole COVID situation affecting the players?
I've got to be honest, I view it as something that is sort of unequivocally bad for the players and the club. We were in a really good run of form. Admittedly, a couple of results hadn't quite gone our way against Chelsea and United, but we'd played well. We looked positive. Team was together. There wasn't any... I mean, there was the one injury to Barkley, but outside of that, we were pretty much okay. And Trezeguet, of course.
Yep.
I don't really see how it can be a positive. Having a load of time off playing, off training, players ill, and I think there's even been comments that some of them may not be available for this game because they're still suffering from the long-term effects. It's undoubtedly a bad thing. I think we have to do everything we can to try and turn it into a positive. I've heard that Dean Smith's been having individual FaceTime calls with all the players to try and highlight where we want to go for the end of the season and that sort of thing. So I think we've done all the things we can to turn it into the sort of best possible outcome. But I don't think anyone, if they'd been offered a 2-week break for COVID, would have said yes. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. It's a tough one. I don't think you can really look at it as a break, because it's not like, say, when there was the break before Project Restart last time, because that was good for us and it helped us stay up, in all fairness, didn't it? But that was because they were able to train, they were able to do stuff. I think the advice is that if you have COVID-19, regardless of whether you're asymptomatic or you have symptoms, that you shouldn't be doing any exercise. So that is kind of time off doing nothing. Whereas time off last time meant that the lads, whether it be via Zoom, and then they were doing training sessions in groups and all that kind of stuff, we were able to do that, and that helped us push on. I'm going to come to you, Ian. Obviously, one thing that we mentioned today was there's obviously been training pictures and videos released by Aston Villa. We've kind of had a look at them to see if there's any notable absentees and who has been training, just so we can get a bit of an idea of possibly someone who may have had COVID-19 and been symptomatic and maybe struggling. So what have you kind of gathered from that?
From my short bit of an analysis, everybody seemed to be there in terms of who's been starting recently. The only one I could spot that wasn't, and it might be just because of the footage Villa have shown themselves on Twitter and Facebook, etc., and in the media, was Courtney Horse and I think Trezeguet. But apart from that, I think everybody was there. And then there was, I think, one of the young lads, Carney, I won't even try and pronounce his second name, Chukwuanu or something, of that ilk, was also training with the first team in the footage today. So that's encouraging. Obviously, he's getting some experience playing with the quality players in our first team. But all of the big names were there, Jack Grealish, Martinez, etc. So it was good to see them back in training, back on the training ground, enjoying themselves, all got smiles on their faces. But I think tomorrow is the interesting one. That team and the team lineup will help us sort of judge who has been affected by the COVID situation more so than others. But it looked like they were full of energy today in the short footage they've shown on the Villa sort of TV and social media. So fingers crossed it hasn't affected us too badly, and this little break that we have had, even though we've got about four games in hand on a lot of teams, it's always better to have the points on the board, and we've fallen into that bottom half of the table now, no fault of our own because we haven't been able to play, but it would be nice to get back into that top 10 and looking up again. So hopefully there's a good performance in them tomorrow, we can surprise a few people again like we have all season and get a positive result at the Etihad.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough one. Man City are on form. I think they won 9 in a row, possibly, something like that. John Stones is the man in form as centre-half and as their main goal scorer. I think Aguero's missing, whether that's COVID-related or not. I think he actually is in isolation. So I suppose that's kind of a good thing for us, because Aguero always seems to score against us. I've spoken to a couple of people recently who've asked me, they're Man City fans who've asked me, how we'll approach the game. And it's just one of them. We can't really go off recent form because our last game was 3 weeks ago, and you just don't know who's, realistically, we don't know who's fit and who's not fit. I mean, Ross Barkley has been training and obviously he has been injured. So you'd like to think he's going to be back, but you don't know, do you? Because, I mean, we thought he was going to be back for West Brom and Crystal Palace and you know, in November and December. And that hasn't happened. So it's going to be an interesting one. It's a tough one to gauge. I mean, what are your thoughts on the game tomorrow? How do you see it? Do you see us, you know, being competitive despite having those 3 weeks off?
Certainly going to be interesting, isn't it? I think we'll get a gauge for it in the first 10, 15 minutes. I mean, if we're going back to our last game on New Year's Day against Man United, I think we sat off them too much in the first sort of quarter of the game and gave them a little bit too much respect. And it showed just after halftime when we really got at them and didn't give them any space and sort of had that high aggressive press. We were winning the ball back in their final third and creating lots of chances. And unfortunately, we lost to a dodgy penalty. But it'll be interesting to see how we start that first 15 tomorrow. If we're full of energy, full of beans, pressing high, obviously it might play into City's favour, getting in behind us a little bit. But I suppose you go there and you play like we have all season, and we could come away with a positive result. It's going to be a tough game, don't get me wrong. Absolutely, they're in form. They're looking pretty at the moment. They're scoring goals and they're not conceding too many either. And obviously, they've got a goal-scoring centre-half in John Stones that's suddenly popped up and looking like he might be getting back in the England team and starting for England soon. But if he carries on that form. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Hopefully, it hasn't affected us too much. I'm praying we can get a positive result, because it'd be nice just to sort of spark us back into life after this break of 2 weeks.
Okay, just before we go then, let's get a prediction off both of you. Score prediction for tomorrow's game. I'm going to come to you first, Joe. What do you think?
You know what? I genuinely think we can beat them. I think the hardest game we've had this season so far is definitely Man United, considering the form they were in coming into it. The players that we were missing and sort of their play style, I felt they were the biggest threat to us out of everyone. I don't see any reason we can't get a point off Man City, to be honest. I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Confident, fairly confident. Ian, what are you thinking, score prediction?
Yeah, Joe's taking me, beating me to it. I was going to say 1-1 as well, hoping that we can get a positive result and surprise them a little bit. It'd be nice to see us going for it again. And it's just going to be a lovely feeling watching Villa again, even though it's on the TV and not live. But I'm looking forward to it, seeing us back in action. So, yeah, I'll go 1-1.
I'm going to book the trend. I'm going to go 2-1 Man City. I shouldn't go against us, but I just feel that the time off, we might struggle, and Man City are on form. We haven't beaten them in the league since 2013. So that's what I'm thinking. But there we go. We spoke to Ben from the Marseille View, an English Marseille fan channel. Obviously, give us a bit of an overview on Morgan Sanson. Touched on some of his stats, goals, assists, etc. Ben's obviously mentioned about his positions, strengths, weaknesses, etc. We touched on Conor Hourihan leaving, mentioned a few tweets from people that they've put on Twitter, kind of saying farewell to him. He's gone loan to Swansea City. We also just briefly touched on the COVID situation that Aston Villa found themselves in, and we haven't played a game, our first team at least anyway, haven't played a game since the 1st of January, New Year's Day against Manchester United, and we're just giving our predictions for the game tomorrow against Manchester City. So once again, Ian Gillett, massive thank you.
Always a pleasure, Chris. Great to be on again, and nice to break up the week on hump day, and look forward to the game tomorrow.
Yep, definitely. And again, Joe Davidson, massive thanks again.
Yep, great to be back. Hopefully there won't be any other 3-week layoffs for COVID.
I know, yeah. It's rubbish, isn't it? It's like, you know, especially the kind of the year we've had, it's football's been something that's got people through it. So, you know, to kind of go 3 weeks without football, and I found it very difficult to watch other games. I think without the fans being there, there's no atmosphere for the game. So I find myself not wanting or not needing to watch the games, and they've been tough to watch. So hopefully tomorrow will be a good one. So we'll see. But massive thank you, everyone, for listening. Make sure you hit that, go onto YouTube, hit that subscribe button. Obviously, we've got Terry's Talk shows on there. And we've kind of rounded up some transfer rumours, transfer news. Also, there's been some interviews on there that me and Ian have done over the past few months. And as usual, there is the full 90 podcasts that we do post-match. We haven't done for 3 weeks, but hopefully we'll be able to get that up and running again tomorrow. But a massive thank you to everyone. We've been Villa together. Thank you.
Up the Villa.